idea. As I recall, you said it was impossible to escape at the time. We are going to survive. We are going to give that ship an epic beatdown, and we are going to jump out of this trap. That's a bold statement for a guy who has no clue how we can do that. Go big or go home. Our goal here is to go home, knucklehead. Okay, I chose the wrong cliche. Besides, while I don't know how we'll do it, I now do know how to start working on a solution. You do. How? The way I usually do it, by asking you a bunch of stupid, painfully obvious questions. I am so not looking forward to this. Hit me. The Outsider is one step ahead of us, ever since it tried to steal Dogzilla, yes. I meant specifically in the running battle here. We need to try something different. Einstein said the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. With respect to a reasonably smart monkey, that never made sense to me. If you keep hitting your head against a brick wall, the wall will eventually break. That's only true if you're a woodpecker. A person will die of brain damage before any of those bricks move. My point is, Valkyrie isn't going to win this fight for us. We need your help. I am helping, he sniffed, in case you haven't been paying attention. We need you to help in a different way. Okay. How? Well, I'm working on it. What if instead of you jamming the nanobot data feed, you focus on blocking the effect that is jamming Bilby's higher functions? I am jamming the data feed because you told me to do that. I might have been wrong. Answer the question, please. I wargamed that also. The end result is the same. It takes the Outsider a bit longer to degrade our defenses to a decisive level, but after that, Valkyrie is a sitting duck and is quickly destroyed. There is only so much Bilby can do when the enemy has the advantage of seeing everything we are doing in an almost real-time data feed. Shit, all right. Those are the only two options if you are asking me to do something. Joe, he gave a heavy sigh. The real problem is the Outsider knows me. It has studied me. It knows what I can do and what I can't do. The worst part is it apparently has copied some of its actions directly from my greatest hits catalog. Holy, you have a catalog of your... I mean that as a metaphor, dum-dum. Okay. The damned thing is copying my greatest hits and not even paying a royalty. Yes, let's focus on what is truly important. Oh, shut up. You see the issue? Anything I can do, it knows about. It can perform all my hits. Plus, I hate to admit this, it has demonstrated abilities I don't have. I felt a little tickle at the back of my mind. That annoying feeling usually meant my subconscious was forming an idea. What was it? Oh, that is not exactly true. Thanks for the pep talk, but it is not true. For example, only you can create wormhole shortcuts. Yes, that ability is super useful here. You can also warp space-time. If you are thinking I can create a Star Trek type of warp drive, I suggest you prepare for disappointment. Nope. So, question for you. The damping field around us. There's nothing you can do about it. As I already told you, I can hack into the nanobots around us in a relatively static area, and given enough time, I can disable the field across a local area. Unfortunately, the Outsider won't allow us to stay motionless in one place long enough for me to do that. Okay, but also I can't multitask in this situation. If I work on the damping field, I can't jam the sensor feed, and I can't shield Bilby and the ship's higher systems from interference. What happens if you stop jamming the sensor feed? The Outsider will quickly pinpoint our location, course, and speed, and the result will not be anything good for us. I mean, what exactly will happen? To the nanobots, and to the data feed flowing between them. Seriously? There is no way I could dumb this down enough for you to understand. Let me ask a more limited question. Imagine, for example, there is a squadron of UN Navy sensor frigates. They are each passively scanning an area they are responsible for, looking for signs of stealthed enemy ships. Disturbances in the interstellar medium, oxygen leaking from airlock doors, plasma leaking from reactors, that sort of thing. Yes. If you are thinking we can track the conquest that way, you can forget that's not my question. Each ship in this imaginary squadron is feeding data back to the squadron leader on a tight beam laser link. Also, each ship receives a data summary from the leader to maintain situational awareness. If that link gets interrupted and then restored, both ships repeat all the data that wasn't transmitted. It is a two-way feed. Do you understand what I'm asking? Yes, but... Oh, you are a clever monkey. Maybe. Maybe. And shmaybe this could work. If I stop jamming the sensor feed, all the nanobots in the area will seek to update all the other bots, including providing the location of unauthorized vessels in the area, Valkyrie and Conquis. Yeah? Is there any way you could tap into that feed temporarily? No, I will still be locked out, but I believe I won't have to tap into the feed. There will be so much data transmitted, such a sudden flood of photons, that I should be able to map any voids in the field where transmissions are not originating. That is where we will find our enemy. Great. I slapped the table. Finally, we're making progress. You think that, but sadly, it is not true. The sensor feed update will be over in a few seconds, then the nanobot field will return to a steady state, and the local energy level won't be dense enough for me to see through all the dust and crap out there. We could shoot at the Conquis, but by the time our railgun darts traveled there, the battleship would have moved out of the way. We won't shoot. Then what is the point of we won't shoot from here? Unless you know of a way to create a virtual railgun out of nothing, we know, but that would be amazing. Make a note for me to look into that later. Listen, knucklehead, I am not here to take notes for. Next question. The damping field here prevents us from jumping at all, or it only prevents us from jumping away to a safe distance? How about I break it down for you, Barney style? We jump, ship, go boom. I know how a jump drive works, you ass. The ship won't explode, it will just wreck the drive coils. It will just wreck the drive coils. Wow, I feel so much better about that. Our drive will fail to form a stable jump wormhole, but it will form a wormhole. A very short-lived, weak, and small wormhole. What if we do that while you are scrambling the damping field, messing with it as much as you can temporarily across the area right around us? That won't make any diff. Do that while you are warping space-time to create an essentially flat area of space around Valkyrie. Do both of those things at the same time, he gasped. Yes. Do you have any idea how difficult that will be? No, and I do not care. You, he sputtered. You don't care? Not even a tiny little bit. Oh, this is. Joe, you pride yourself on being a grunt, but really you have become that asshole general officer who gives orders to do things that have to be done. You're wrong. I don't care how difficult it is for you, because I was a grunt. When shit has to get done to achieve an objective, someone has to just fucking do it. Suck it up and make it happen. That's grunt life for you. Nobody gives a shit how tough it was for you to carry out your orders. They just care that the job gets done. Welcome to the military. Now, can you do it or not? I can. It just. Great. I slapped the table again. Next question. Can you jam the damping field and flatten space-time enough for us to perform a micro-jump during the short time when the nanobot sensor field is updating and we can pinpoint the position of the Conquis? I really want to say no, he grumbled. So that's a yes. Ugh, this is so unfair. Skippy, when the game is on the line, your all-star player gets the ball. For us, that is you. Stop whining. Have I screwed myself by being so reliably awesome? You think? I hate my life. You know who's gonna be hating life? The outsider, when you not only perform several of your greatest hits it can't do, you also will add yet another item to your greatest hits catalog. Well, I suppose that is a very good point. Outstanding. Reed, I press the intercom button. Come to my office, please. Now, sir. Unless your thumb is currently plugging a reactor leak, now. Yes, sir. She strode in, streaks of black and red grease on her face, her uniform top, and in her hair. She must have been assisting a damage control team. That's a bold fashion statement, Fireball. It's the latest thing, sir. She sat down as I closed the door. I noticed her pointedly looking at my clean uniform. Reed, I could either fumble around trying to help the engineering team, or I could find a way out of this mess. That made her sit up straight in the chair. You did, sir? Maybe. I have a terrible, awful, crazy idea, and I want you to make it happen. The skin around her eyes briefly tightened with a not this shit again expression. Then she shrugged. What's the plan? Find that ship. Take it out. Kill it. You have a way to do that? Skippy does, we think. Shmaybe. It's worth a shot. How will... Skippy interrupted. All Joe wants me to do is identify where the battleship is. Then, during the split second before we lose track of the thing, I have to both counteract the damping field and flatten space-time enough for us to perform a micro-jump. That is not going to be easy. She went with understatement. Joe doesn't care. He thinks he's still a grunt, Skippy sniffed. General Bishop is a grunt, she insisted. If you doubt that, ask an E4 in the army. They have his back and they know he has theirs. You never leave the E4 Mafia, Skippy, I agreed. Wargame this for us on the display here, please. We have a lot of work to do, and we need to get it done before the Conquest finds us again. Chapter 21 Skippy held up a hand as Reed stood to leave my office. Joe, hold a moment. I need to talk with you. Whatever you need to say, you can say it to Reed also. Valkyrie is her ship. This will be her fight. It's not a tactical issue. He stared at me, eyes wide, pleading with me. It's okay, sir. Reed paused, a hand on the door. I have to go now if we're going to have any chance at making this work. I nodded, she left, and I closed the door again. What is it, Skippy? This maneuver is highly unlikely to succeed. Too many moving parts that all have to work together, I know. That also. Most of your plans are horrifically complicated, and somehow we make it work anyway. This time, I fear, is different. Not this again. Yes, this time our opponent is an energy being from beyond the galaxy. That doesn't mean our opponent isn't the issue. Joe, I keep trying to beat this into your head over and over, and you just don't get it. Before, we accomplished incredibly unlikely things because we cheated. We had help from the probability field. You don't know that. I know simple math. There is no way we could have survived all the crazy shit you planned over the years unless some unseen entity was helping us. It selected improbable probabilities again and again. That is how we are still here. We've had this argument too many times, Skippy. That field protected the elders. No way did it assist the merry band of pirates while we worked to break everything the elders cared about. You are making an assumption I once agreed with, that I fear is no longer valid. The field was designed to protect the elders. I have become increasingly concerned that the outsider somehow has compromised that field, that it assisted us, used us, to get rid of its greatest threat, the elders. That made me blink. You think it outsourced the job to us? Basically, yes. Do you have any actual evidence of all this, or are you guessing? I am using logic to explain a chain of extremely unlikely events. If the outsider has control of the probability field, why aren't we dead now? It doesn't work that way, you moron. Also, now that the elders are safely up in Ascension Land, the field might not be active at all. My point is we can no longer count on surviving when the odds are hugely against us. What are the odds this op will succeed? 58%, because I am doing most of the work and I am awesome. What are our odds of survival if we don't try this plan? 0. I'm no math expert, but 58 seems better than 0. Fine. When a railgun dart smashes your stupid head, don't say I didn't warn you. That's the beauty of this plan, Skippy. I grinned and stood up. Death will come so fast I will die blissfully believing I was right. I have never hated you more than I do right now. The straps on my chair tightened, the nanofabric adjusting automatically to hold me in place. I gave the straps a tug anyway. The mechanism held me securely in place based on current conditions. I knew what was going to happen and that the straps might not react quickly enough. That was why I also pressed the back of my head into the cushion where a field would stabilize not only my thick skull, it would protect my brain from bouncing around. Fireball. I glanced at the clock on the main display, then at her. The clock showed we had last broken off contact 55 minutes before. The Conquest would be back, and soon. That meant the battleship was close. It might appear out of the dust cloud at any moment, especially since I had ordered Reed to decelerate the ship. Our next engagement would be at a slower speed relative to the Spider battleship, extending the time we could shoot effectively. According to math, that would also extend the duration of our inevitable punishment. Sometimes math really sucks. The ship is ready in all respects, sir. Outstanding. Skippy?
Yes?
He was pre-annoyed at me, anticipating the strenuous work he would soon be engaged in. Do your thing. We will get only one chance at this, so the navigator needs to input the correct coordinates and anticipate changes in real time based on the course and speeds of the two ships. I'm reasonably sure the navigator understands his job, I said as the guy in the co-pilot couch gave me a thumbs up without looking away from his console. Do your thing, please. Monkeys programming a jump, he grumbled. I do not anticipate any problems with that. If this goes sideways, it will not be my fault. Okay, I am no longer jamming the nanobot swarm data feed as of now. Holy shit, that freaking battleship is only 80,000 kilometers behind us. Jump! Jump, jump, jump! There wasn't anything I could do, so I didn't do anything, other than watch Valkyrie's crew do their jobs. The navigator's fingers flew over his console. I watched him check and double-check his numbers. The pilot also verified the jump calculations, then the pilot tapped the icon to initiate a jump. He folded his arms across his chest so his hands wouldn't accidentally touch the controls. Jumping in 3, 2, 1. Always, always tug your seat straps as tight as they will go when you know you're about to do something stupid. When I was little, I once jumped off the roof of my uncle's garage using a bedsheet as a parachute. I say once because there was no repeat performance of my attempt to be the Batman of Northern Maine. Being 5 years old meant I escaped my mishap with only a few bumps and bruises, while these days, sometimes I sleep wrong on my pillow and my back will ache for a week. That particular day in the quarantine zone, the something stupid I did was order Valkyrie to jump on top of a senior species battleship. Hey, I've done things that are much stupider, which, now that I think about it, does make me look as good as I intended. Valkyrie jumped. Decelerating before the battle meant we were moving only 50 meters per second relative to the Conquise and on a roughly parallel course. It was a short jump, technically a micro jump. With Skippy in control, we could have emerged within half a meter of the target coordinates. Bilby could have managed a spherical probability of error within 7 meters. Our human navigator nailed it with 79 meters, slightly ahead of the battleship on its port side. Surprise, motherfucker, I whispered as I pressed my fragile head back into the cushion, feeling the suspensor field already gently nudging me into position. When the collision happened, we hit hard. Not armor on armor. The two ships didn't make contact physically. Our shields slammed into the battleship's shields, both energy fields briefly pushed back, and both shields shorted out in spectacular arcs of suddenly free electricity that didn't have anywhere to go. In addition to the spine-chilling scream of tearing metal composites, we could hear and feel the deep thump-thump-thump pulsing of railguns firing on pre-selected targets, and then there was a brief silence as the battleship coasted past us. Our railguns hadn't done enough damage in the brief encounter. That's okay. We had stolen a move from the Outsider's Greatest Hits catalog. We were rude by literally crashing the party, so we brought party favors. Every missile that wasn't already in a rotary launcher was in a starboard side docking bay, the big doors open, missiles secured by suspensor fields. Those fields snapped off moments after our defense shields shorted out, and the missiles roared out on settings of maximum thrust, minimal guidance. They almost couldn't miss at that range. The target was enormous and right there. We got lucky. Also, Skippy lied, sort of. He had bitched and moaned that between locating the battleship, flattening space-time, and keeping basic ship functions from failing, his bandwidth was fully occupied. Yet because he is awesome, something he rarely talks about, he also sent out an energy pulse of his own. Not one we could see, or the ship's already blinded sensors could detect. This pulse was in a higher level of space-time. It couldn't do anything to the Outsider. It sure as hell could scramble the battleship's targeting systems. A more experienced opponent would have been prepared for the merry band of pirates doing, well, some cowboy pirate shit, would have created a protocol to bypass the safety systems of the battleship's weapons. The Outsider hadn't done that. Without a target to shoot at, without a verified firing solution, without overriding the range safety settings to make sure the weapons didn't damage their own ship, the weapons of the Conquise refused commands to fire until it was too late. The big spider battle wagon never got off a shot. Our missiles normally would not have armed their warheads until they were at minimum 2,000 meters from Valkyrie, but their range safety settings had been dialed back to 50 meters. They went hot almost the instant they cleared the docking bay doors, accelerating at 300 Gs. 84% of our missiles struck the Conquise, aimed at the forward two-thirds of the enemy ship. We had not targeted the aft third of that ship, the vital engineering section, out of fear an explosion of the reactors or the jump drive capacitors losing containment would tear apart Valkyrie's unshielded hull. Silence. Not silence exactly. Consoles were beeping, people were talking, the hull was groaning as structural frames recovered from being stressed, armor plating pinged and occasionally banged from debris impacts. Debris that used to be coherent parts of a senior species battleship. That debris was mostly blasting outward, not backward, and the battleship's momentum was carrying it away from us. Skippy, I cleared my throat. Can you? I'm warning you. It is ugly. He anticipated my request. The main display showed a composite image of the Conquise. Only of the engineering section. The forward two-thirds of the hull was gone. Just not there anymore. Frames that used to connect the aft section to everything forward were twisted, melted, breaking away. Electricity arced from severed power conduits. All of the reactors were venting bright, hot fountains of plasma. That was a reaction of the ship's safety systems, I guessed. The outsider had to know it had lost the battle, that salvaging anything of its ship was a futile effort. Weps, Reed called out to the station behind us. Maintain a lock on that ship's jump drive capacitor banks.
Check, the officer responded. I have four railguns tasked and ready.
Railguns dialed up to 11?
Yes, ma'am.
Outstanding. Pilot, this is a bad neighborhood. Pedal to the metal. Get us out of here.
Rolling up the windows and locking the doors, ma'am, the pilot replied, and we all felt the ship surge with deceleration, allowing the battleship to drift farther ahead. I had a bad feeling. If the outsider released the capacitor energy, the explosion could cripple Valkyrie. Without our shields, millions of nanobots were impacting our hull, and some of them would survive to cause trouble. The battle wasn't over yet. It wouldn't be over until we killed the outsider, which we didn't know how to do.
Reed, we should consider lighting off the boosters to put some distance between—
No! Skippy warned.
What? He didn't need to answer. I could see it happen on the display. The battleship was jumping away. A tear in space-time was forming ahead of the Conquise, and the wreck of that ship coasted onward to plunge into it. The event horizon flickered, surged, brightened and dimmed, expanded and contracted, flared again, and was gone. The aft end of the battleship began tumbling, and I pumped a fist.
Ha! The jump failed, and then discharged the capacitors. You can't run away now, you piece of—
That was when the battleship exploded. We survived. I was wrong about a lot of things. Okay, most things. One thing I'd been wrong about was the failed jump had eaten up most of the energy in the battleship's capacitors, so the explosion wasn't catastrophic for us. It wasn't anything good, and after the ship's systems came back online, Reed shot me several accusing looks, whether she intended for me to see the death glare or not. That was okay. I had promised not to break her ship, and based on how the armor on one side was smoking, I had sort of broken it. Again. Well, I shrugged. Look at the bright side. The nanobots on that part of the armor were melted also. Plus, we survived and the outsider didn't. That has to count for—
Wrong, numbskull.
Skippy glared at me. It was be pissed off at Joe Bishop Day. That damned thing got away again. You saw a streak of light again?
No.
Okay, then I saw what you saw. Joe, it jumped away.
What I saw was the jump attempt failed. The aft section, I said it jumped away, not the battleship. It copied another of my greatest hits, a failed jump. That wormhole couldn't pull the ship through, but it was open and coherent long enough for the outsider to escape through.
Fuck! I lost my cool in front of the crew. That was not cool.
Where did it go?
I don't know. Hey, it's not my fault. There was a lot of energy flying around, you know, and that wormhole was seriously dorked up. All I can tell you is the jump length was between 12 and 32 light hours.
Beyond the quarantine zone, then. It must have a ship waiting out there.
That is a good bet, yes.
This was all for nothing, then. Those were also words I shouldn't have spoken aloud where the crew could hear.
That's not true, sir. Reed shook her head. This op wasn't a failure for us. We survived an ambush. The outsider failed to kill us and capture or neutralize Skippy. We will be getting out of here.
She paused, mouth open.
We will be jumping away from here.
She directed that question at Skippy.
Yeah, just give me time to work on something. Have some patience, will you?
As if that's ever gonna happen, he added, not quite under his breath.
Skippy, we no longer care about a sensor data feed, so can you focus on restoring Bilby's functions? Then he can direct maintenance bots to bring the jump drive online faster than we could do it.
I could do that. Or I could do something much smarter.
Like what?
Like me giving another gift to the entire galaxy?
The meat sacks here won't be grateful, but
he sighed.
I'll do it anyway.
What are you talking about?
Colonel Reed, please bring the ship to within 93,000 kilometers of the planet.
Why?
She looked at me, not the Avatar.
Would I do that?
The nano-being, or whatever down there, has mostly minded its own business for over hundreds of thousands of years. But now it has pissed me off, so I am gonna fuck it up!
What do you mean?
I asked. Take it out, permanently. Kill it at the source. Fry the control mechanism. Better than that, I'm going to seize that thing by the throat and propagate a command that will self-destruct every nanobot in this system. Once again, Skippy the Magnificent will fix a meat sack mistake.
You can do this at no risk to us or yourself?
Joe, you cannot imagine how angry I am right now.
Bring me to within range of the central control node down there, and we will be able to jump away within the hour.
Reed, do what the beer can asks. Let's get the hell out of here ASAP.
Skippy was true to his word. The dust cloud lit up as nanobots erupted on and all around the planet, the effect spreading outward at the speed of light. Within hours, every nanobot in the star system should not only be disabled, they should have dissipated into incoherent molecules. The dust cloud saturating the quarantine zone would be just that. Dust. Harmless, other than still acting as a navigation hazard. For a moment, when I saw that planet's entire surface catch fire, saw even the deep oceans boiling, I felt a pang of regret. I had allowed Skippy to fry a world, to kill what had essentially become a biosphere. Then I thought, fuck the nanobots. They had killed a real biosphere, the greedy little bastards. Yes, I know it wasn't their fault. They had been programmed to consume and to construct more of themselves, and they did that. Somehow they had become more than mindless tiny machines. They built a sort of civilization. Had me allowing Skippy to wipe them out been an act of genocide? If left alone, could the nanobots eventually have created great art, contributed to the collective culture and knowledge of our galaxy? Maybe. Or maybe those hungry little fuckers could have spread across the galaxy consuming everything. I can live with what I did. With no damping field, no weird effect scrambling Bilby's brain, and no advanced killer battleship chasing us, Valkyrie was able to jump away, after just a bit more than the hour Skippy boasted about. We jumped a safe distance beyond the edge of the quarantine zone with our shields still down. The ship was vulnerable to the quarantine containment systems. In stealth, the ship drifted while repairs were conducted to the shield generators, the main engines, just about every system that could be repaired without the service of a space dock. 11 hours after we jumped away from the ambush site, the ship's sensors detected the glow of nanobots erupting at the far edge of the quarantine zone.
That's it, Skippy crowed. All those nasty little fuckers are dead.
It looks great. I walked close to the main display.
How can you be sure of that?
You can see it, so what I see is a lot of light.
Photons.
Well, duh. The nanobots were too small for your squishy eyes to see, and now they all are nothing but incoherent dust.
All of them?
I'm gonna talk really slowly, so you can understand this. We saw
the nanobots burning on the planet and around the planet, and now the effect is here. I was able to predict when we would see the effect here because the self-destruct signal I planted travels at the speed of light. Yes,
and the speed of light is extremely precise and doesn't vary. That is not exactly true. The speed of light in a vacuum is constant. Again, that is not exactly the speed of light between here and the freaking planet is constant. Close enough.
Did that answer your question?
No. How can you be certain, absolutely certain, that all of those little buggers are dead? Every single one of them. Seriously?
Yes, duh.
If we tell the senior species the nanobot threat here is over, they will end the very expensive quarantine effort. Then both of them and every other jackass in the galaxy will be on a treasure hunt here looking for surviving remnants of those bots.
I do not know why I even bother talking with you. This is the thanks I get after I, all by myself, and a major threat to the entire galaxy?
We will be very grateful if you actually did end the threat. It only takes one of those damn things to start replicating, and in a few years or even months, we will be right back to—
Oh, I see what you mean now.
Your concern is actually reasonable, given your total ignorance of the facts.
What? This is my bad.
Thanks. So, I know you are stupid, but sometimes I forget just how—
Choose your next words very carefully.
How about I simply explain the relevant facts?
That would be great.
I could feel my face turning red.
The original nanobots were individually self-replicating machines. That is how they got out of control. Transcription errors are inevitable, and there was no quality assurance mechanism to prevent the propagating of harmful mutations.
But those mutations were beneficial, not harmful, I argued. They benefited the overall population of bots, I mean. The mutations allowed the bots to survive and evolve, to evade the controls built into them and the external efforts to wipe them out.
That is true.
So why did you say that was true?
When the bots were truly individuals, each little machine only had to be concerned about the survival of itself, making copies of itself and the survival of those copies. When the population of bots merged with AIs and took complete control of the planet, they became a singular organism. Individuals were not only not needed, they could not be tolerated. Evolution was allowed only in the form of planned upgrades, while unplanned mutations had to be stomped out, or burned out by triggering a bot's overload mechanism.
What if a mutation was something good?
The nano-being organism did not care. Think about it. It had supreme control of the majority of a star system. If it missed taking advantage of a beneficial mutation, that wouldn't affect its happy, stable existence. Until I arrived, it had no external enemies, no threats to its power or existence. It did have plenty of potential internal threats. A new, more efficient, and more capable nanobot could replicate out of control and take over. So, a safety mechanism was built into all nanobots. The desired level of population was reached within the first 3,000 years. After that, increasing the number of bots was actually harmful. The asteroid belt had been consumed, with that mass distributed across the inner system. So much mass had been repositioned, it affected the orbit of the inner planets. The nano-being had to make a major effort over more than 15,000 years to achieve a new orbital equilibrium to avoid throwing the planet Vorvestican out of orbit. Anyway, once the population stabilized at the optimal level, bots were not allowed to replicate without permission. When a replication occurred, the newly created copy was inspected by 10 other bots to assure the new bot conformed to the master template. If any replication errors were found, the new bot and its parent were destroyed.
Okay, the nano-being wanted a genetically identical population.
Sort of.
Yes, very similar to the genocidal eugenics program the Theranin inflicted on their own species long ago in their history.
Joe, now do you understand why I am certain the nanobots have all been wiped out? Even if a few of them missed the memo to destroy themselves, they can't replicate without the appropriate command from an authorized source. That source is gone.
You hit it where it was vulnerable.
Good job, Skippy.
If you had just trusted the awesomeness,
the awesomeness I trust. What I don't trust is your absent-minded lack of focus sometimes.
Hey, I am busy, he huffed.
All right, then. I scratched my chin.
The kitties and spiders will be curious about the flash of light that just saturated the quarantine zone. We need to give them an explanation.
Sir, Reed spoke.
Do we?
The quarantine zone isn't our responsibility.
It isn't, but it could become our problem. Or even an advantage temporarily.
Sir?
Right now, the kiddies have significant resources tied up here to contain their mistake. It has to be driving them crazy that they have to play nice with the Rindaloo here. We could keep the Maxulks tied down here while making points with the spiders. We will give the truth to the spiders. They can quietly pull back some of their personnel commitment here if they believe us. And to the Maxulks, we'll tell them something like, the Outsider provided the nanobots with a stealth capability. The things are still in the quarantine zone. They just can't be seen. We'll tell the kiddies this new model of nanobot could be sneaking out of the quarantine zone right now, so they have to be extra vigilant.
Joe? Skippy chuckled. That is an ingeniously evil scheme.
Thanks. You can seriously be an asshole sometimes. The difference is I save my inner asshole for special occasions. All right, Fireball, I'm going to my office to compose a message to the spiders and kitties here. Then we're getting the hell out of this place. You're right. This quarantine is not our responsibility. Reed and I were in her office discussing our next move. Damage to the ship was nowhere near as bad as it had looked while we were engaged in a constant battle. A lot of the broken components could be swapped out for spares now that we could take systems offline. Still, the engineering team and the maintenance bots could do only so much work. Major repairs would require 3 days in a space dock. Going back to Earth was the logical option. We also needed to visit Missile Mart to replenish our magazines. We had launched almost every weapon that could fly at the Conquise when we jumped in on top of it. Really, knowing we would very likely get only one chance to jump the battleship, we had stuffed the starboard side docking bays with all of the ship-killer missiles, all of our decoys, half of the sensor drones, since they could also act as decoys and saturate the battleship's defenses, and, well, just about everything. The only missiles we held back were the dedicated attack coordinators, the units that processed networked sensor data and assigned each killer missile a role in the attack. In the final fight against the Conquise, there hadn't been any time for any sort of coordination. All the missiles had been instructed to burn hard along their predetermined flight paths and to explode if they contacted anything with armor plating. The attack coordinator missiles, by the way, were bitter about being left out of the fight, and they had threatened a Union work stoppage. Thankfully, that dispute lasted only 3 milliseconds before their fellow members of the Energetic Weapons Guild shouted them down. There might also have been threats that uncooperative missiles would find themselves sleeping at the core of a gas giant, if you know what I mean. I stayed out of the argument. Anyway, I hope Reed has a coupon for a discount on a complete loadout of missiles. Otherwise, her shopping trip is gonna be expensive. The other option was for us to go to Jaguar and use the shipyard there. Reed suggested that we consider that option. We both knew she did that because I was worried about my family. No, Jaguar was not the best option, so I discarded it. Reed, thanks for the offer, but only the shipyard at Earth has experience with the newest version of Valkyrie. That makes the decision easy. Skippy's avatar appeared immediately.
That is not true, Joe. When we were there on the courier ship, I uploaded Valkyrie's new specs to the Jaguar space dock. Most of the work we need will be automated. I estimate 3 days if Admiral Chatterjee assigns the highest level of priority to this job. Also, I want to make sure Pup-Tart is following my instructions properly. It wasn't designed to protect the planet. And the journey to Jaguar from here is 29 hours shorter than the time to reach Earth.
Reed silently raised an eyebrow. Okay, I agreed. Your logic has convinced me. Reed pressed an icon on her phone.
Mr. Gasquet, set a least time course for Jaguar and jump when ready.
Least time course for Jaguar base, aye, the ship's executive officer acknowledged.
Now, if there isn't anything else you need me for, Skippy huffed, I have to assist Bilby in bringing Reactor 4 online.
His avatar blinked out.
Sir, Reed said, I think I know the answer, but the question has to be asked. Instead of going to a space dock for repairs, should we consider trying to track the Outsider?
Should we?
Probably not, even if we could. We have no idea where the thing is, where it is going, where it could go, or what the hell it wants.
We know it wants to take Skippy out of the fight, she reminded me. Whatever its objective is, the Outsider doesn't believe it can accomplish its goal while Skippy is active.
That is, I tapped the table, a good point. Fireball? I leaned back in my chair.
A very good point. Yeah, that narrows the list of possibilities. She cocked her head.
How, sir?
If it was doing something in secret, something we wouldn't know about, or doing it somewhere we wouldn't know about until it was too late, it wouldn't care about Skippy messing up its plans. Whatever its objective, it is concerned we will discover what it's doing, and that we at least have the potential to interfere, to stop its plans.
Huh. This is a big damned galaxy. It could set off a supernova and we wouldn't know about it for years unless someone had a sensor platform parked close to that star.
So whatever it's planning to do, it will take a long time from start to finish, she mused.
Long enough for someone to notice and for us to act against it. Act effectively before it accomplishes whatever it's supposed to do.
It was her turn to sit back in her chair.
We could be looking at a timeline of years then.
Centuries even. We think in terms of days, weeks, months. The outsider might make plans on a timescale of decades or centuries. Whatever it plans to do, it's not concerned the meat sacks in this galaxy can stop it. It's only afraid of Skippy.
Well, I'm not sure about that, sir. It might be counting on its new allies, the Maxulks, to keep the spiders occupied so they're too busy to interfere with the outsider.
Okay, true. For now, we've only seen that it is concerned about Skippy. I want to explore that possibility.
Shit.
What? I said we might not notice what it's been doing for years if the location is remote.
Yes?
What if it has already started and no one has seen it yet?
Shit, she breathed. Something beyond the edge of the galaxy, like where the Elders set up that radio receiver thing, the one that started this whole mess?
If that's true, the outsider could have been working on it for hundreds of years.
That actually makes me feel better.
Sir?
Nothing, I stammered.
Shit, I shouldn't have opened my big, stupid mouth. Reed didn't know about the probability field, so she didn't know I was concerned that by giving the Elders a free lifetime pass to Ascension Land, Skippy and I might have disabled that field.
What I meant is, I coughed to cover my guilty feelings about lying to an officer I respected. If this has been going on since before I met Skippy, at least it's one thing the Joint Chiefs can't blame on me.
She sucked in her lips, looking down at the desk.
Uh-huh. Damn it, she knew I was lying.
Listen, Reed, it's not...
Sir, I know a whole lot of shit that keeps me awake at night. Things I wish I didn't know about. If something is so scary you don't want to tell me, I would appreciate not ever knowing. Unless it... She let out a long sigh. Is something I need to know about.
It isn't. It's not anything actionable, I assured her.
Skippy says it's something I shouldn't worry about, but...
I held up my hands.
I get it, sir. Someone has to.
Right.
Okay.
I glanced at the clock on the wall display. We've been out of contact for a while. We should stop by a friendly relay station along the way to find out whether some huge disaster happened while we were busy.
Chapter 22.
The boys are outside with their friends,
her mother said as Margaret came through the door into the community center. A break in the weather, relative calm that was projected to last nearly 2 days, had allowed civilians to leave underground shelters. Adults had been given military escorts to their homes to collect clean clothing and other non-essential items, and children could go outside with supervision.
I hope they don't get muddy again.
Margaret frowned as she set down the duffel bag of clothes and toys, glancing at her own shoes that were caked with mud. She had kept to the driveway of her house, but the gravel had been washed away, and everything was coated with mud, dead leaves, and trash. Tornadoes had ripped through the west section of Club Skippy, destroying 14 houses and 2 apartment buildings. The casualties would have been horrific if the residents had not been in the underground shelters. The clouds had parted to show the weird sky, a glow that was uniform from horizon to horizon, every moment of day and night. That the local sun had set made no difference. There was no night anywhere on the planet. Animals, both native and imported, were confused by the never-ending light. Plants had gone dormant and started to die soon after Pup-Tart created the shield, then flourished when the steady release of the shield's captured energy was adjusted to match the spectrum of the local star. Joe's parents had been hopeful of saving their crops,
until flooding and hailstorms wiped out half of the acreage. Possibly some wheat and corn might be harvested if the weather settled back into anything resembling a normal pattern. With her mother looking pointedly at Margaret's shoes, which had tracked clods of mud onto the mat inside the doorway, she backed carefully out the door.
"I'll go check on the boys."
A group of children were lying on picnic tables behind the community center, keeping off the wet grass. Except she saw when she was closer they had been playing on the grass, and likely in the new stream that now flowed across the bottom of the parking lot.
"Hi, Mom,"
Renee acknowledged her as she loomed over both of her boys.
"Is everything okay?"
She was concerned because all the children, about 24 of them, were quiet. Unusually quiet. Just lying on their backs, staring up at the sky. Leaning her head back until her neck hurt, she looked up. Between the scattered clouds was only featureless, constant light.
"We're just looking at the sky, Mom. No stars tonight, I'm sorry about that."
"We like it better this way,"
Jeremy spoke before turning his head to look at her.
"You can't see where the monsters are."
A few minutes later, I was walking past the door to the bridge when Reed pinged me. "Reed?" I called from the doorway. It startled her to hear my voice directly rather than through her earpiece or over an intercom.
"Sir, we have a..."
She pointed to the main display, which was showing a convoluted course through 4 Elder wormholes.
"Complication. Skippy has requested we divert to a Kristang world."
Knowing any interaction with the beer can wouldn't be quick, I walked over to stand next to her. "What world? What's there?"
"It's called Red Mundicus. The Fire Dragon Clan controls the space. We have been there before, 6 times,
Gasquet provided the information. 6 times? It was my opportunity to raise an eyebrow at Reed. "Why?" She shrugged.
"Something about his epic opera, that's what he said. We were on his victory tour of the galaxy, so we went wherever he wanted."
"Hey, I call bullshit on that." I clapped my hands. "Skippy!"
You,
he sputtered. "Did you just summon me?" "You're not a genie, so no. Why are we going to Redmond, whatever it's called?" "It's complicated, Joe. Nothing you need to worry about," he coughed nervously. "I just need to pop in and out, make a quick stop. Won't take more than a few hours." "Why are we going there?"
It's like Reed said, my opera.
She did say that, and I called bullshit on it. "Why do you need to go there?"
"Why do you need to know?"
"Valkyrie operates under my authority as commander of Task Force Black. Now, you can do whatever you want, but if you want this ship to take you anywhere that delays our arrival at Jaguar, you need to give me a damn good reason."
"This is harassment. This is reality, beer can. Talk.
And before you do, I want the truth. You start with a lie, and you can forget about any detours."
"Oh, fine. Whatevs. I need to do collections."
"Collections?"
"Yes. The lizards there owe me an envelope."
"I assume this isn't a heartfelt thank you card, so..."
"It's not a physical envelope, dum-dum. That's just an expression. It's a crypto wallet, stuffed full of skip coins."
"Uh-huh. They're paying you for what exactly?"
"Protection."
"Oh my, you are running a protection racket?"
"You make it sound so unsavory."
"Unsavory? I thought I knew how sketchy you could be, but this is a whole new level. You're into extortion now?"
"How is this extortion?"
"How? You threaten to harm people unless they pay you money?"
What?
"You make them pay for protection from what you will do to them if they don't pay." His eyes bulged.
"I can do that? Wow, I never considered that. Wait. You're not doing that?"
"No. The fire dragons there are paying me to provide information about plans other clans have for attacking them. Contracts for assassinations, secret trade deals that would be unfavorable to their interests, that sort of thing. Also, for a modest additional fee, I can insert malware into the ships of other clans who are planning to attack Red Mundicus. It is a lot of work. I am certainly not doing it for free. This is the sort of thing I was doing as a one-time service." Then he chuckled. "I had the brilliant idea to launch a subscription model." "People can subscribe to Skippy?"
"Of course. I offer several convenient payment plans. Which reminds me, your DEFCOM leadership needs to decide which payment option they..."
"Whatever you are about to say, I do not want to hear it."
Fine. But don't come whining to me when the Joint Chiefs ask about...
They can't ask me something about I don't know. Get it?
Whatevs. Anywho, I like your protection plan much better. I can create a demand for my own services. This is a great idea.
No, it is a terrible idea.
I get it. Listen, if you want me to cut you in for a taste, we can work out a... Let me be clear. I do not want to be involved in this scheme in any way.
Oh, he winked.
Gotcha. No, of course you are not involved. I am not involved. I'm getting mixed signals here. When we get to Red Mundicus, I can...
We're not going there.
Joe, be reasonable. If I don't show up to collect, the lizards will lose a measure of respect for me, and...
Skippy, I can't believe I am telling you this, but you shouldn't handle collections.
I shouldn't? He blinked.
Well, then how? You get somebody else to handle collections.
Why would I do that?
First, it makes the point that you are much too important to handle mundane bullshit like collections. That will make them respect you more. Second, if you get investigated, you can deny all knowledge of events.
I like it. Is this what the Beatles refer to as plausible deniability?
Basically, yes.
Another great idea. You are on fire today, Joe.
I have never been more proud of myself, I muttered.
Okay. I could probably get Captain Gumbano to handle collections for me. Of course, I can't trust him at all, so that's a problem.
Right, so you assign a trusted associate to fly with Gumbano, I suggested.
Like who?
I don't know. Who do you trust?
Well, I don't trust anyone. That's my policy. Although I suppose I could ask Minister Gostovsky to recommend...
Gostovsky? He's in the army. How can he...
He was in the army. Then recently I made him an offer he couldn't refuse. Now he is Skipistan's Minister of Finance and Trade.
Wow, I don't foresee any problems with that.
Oh, shut up.
Fireball, I turned to the ship's captain. Maintain our present course. The Godfather here can handle business on his own time.
I thought about what Reed had said. I thought about it a lot. That as far as we knew, and based on the evidence we did have, the Outsider's current goal was to kill or neutralize Skippy. For whatever reason, it feared that Skippy and only Skippy could stop it. That changed our approach to finding the Outsider, to collecting intel about it, to figuring out its plans. Our priorities had to change. Skippy, I called from my office for a closed-door meeting.
Hey, Joe!
He appeared looking rather cheery, which would make my task more difficult.
What's up?
I need to tell you something you will not like.
Oh, for... My protection business is my business. I don't see how you have any...
It's not about that.
Oh, good, then...
Oh, no. Are you starting a boy band?
He shuddered. I told you, your boys are cute, and they actually have some talent, but you are just
no boy band.
Oh. Okay, then hit me. Anything you say at this point can't be that bad.
Listen, Reed said something that changed the way I've been thinking about the Outsider. I thought I had it all figured out, that it was obvious. Then she looked at it differently and totally changed my perspective.
You do that to me all the freaking time.
Right. So our priority had been gathering intel about the Outsider, its movements, abilities, intentions, all that.
Yes. So, we have to do that if we are to stop it.
Yes, but maybe we don't need to do that. Instead of me getting only his usual distracted half-attention, he focused on me.
What do you mean?
The Outsider fears you, and only you.
Well, duh.
So far, all of its efforts had been directed toward taking you out of the fight.
Well, that is not entirely true. It also twice attempted to take control of a sentinel.
Yes, it did that so it could effectively fight you.
A sentinel has many other uses, Joe.
What I know is if it had control of a sentinel, no way would I take Valkyrie into battle against it. Especially not with you aboard the ship.
Okay, I can see that.
What are you saying?
That our priority needs to change. Instead of chasing the Outsider, trying to understand what it wants and what it's doing, our number one priority should be protecting you.
What is the point of having an awesome weapon if you don't use it?
We'll preserve you so you can act later once the Outsider has revealed its objective.
Let me explain, okay?
Break it down Barney style for me, please, because this isn't making any sense.
The Outsider believes you can stop it. That's why it has been trying to take you out of the fight.
At some point, whatever it's doing will be detected, whether it's working to construct another intergalactic radio to contact its masters in the outhouse galaxy, or it is, I waved my hands, doing something else that becomes visible. That is when we will need you to act, to interrupt or disable or destroy the radio or machine or whatever it's using to do what it wants. Until then, we have to assure you will be able and ready to act. I'm going to recommend to the Joint Chiefs that we take you to a secret location and keep you safe there until it is time for you to act.
Huh.
I know you won't like being sidelined, but think of it as an opportunity for you to do something like work on a musical theater thing.
Thing?
You know what I mean. A Broadway show.
Wow.
That is indeed solid, well-reasoned thinking.
Cool.
Thanks. I let out a breath. I was ready for an argument. This is interesting. I get to be you for a while.
What?
You know, when your squishy monkey brain says something incredibly freaking obvious that I somehow didn't consider and makes me hate myself.
I missed something obvious?
Yes.
Duh.
No, I did not. What is it?
Give me a moment.
I want to savor the anticipation. When I smack you with the obvious, please describe how awful you feel and don't hold back. This is for science. Just tell me, you ass. Now you know how I feel all the freaking time. Okay, here it is. You are assuming that anyone could detect what the outsider is doing, but only I can stop it. That is, what if the truth is the opposite? What if, during the early stages of what the outsider is doing, its machine is vulnerable to attack by the senior species, but only I can detect the thing before it grows too powerful to stop?
Shit,
I groaned.
You see?
Yes, I do, damn it. It is obvious, isn't it?
Yes.
Hmm? I didn't hear that. Could you say it louder?
Yes.
Well, he sniffed.
It is a good thing that you have me to keep you from embarrassing yourself.
How is that? Imagine if you had presented your genius plan to the Joint Chiefs and any one of them pointed out what a doofus you are. I really appreciate you not gloating about this.
Oh, like you have never done that to me?
That's different.
No, it is not.
Yes, it is. Skippy, you are awesome. I am, as you so kindly mentioned, a doofus. If you miss something obvious, you are still the galaxy's ultimate source of extreme awesomeness.
Well, I suppose that is a very good point.
See, if I do something smart, I get a small temporary boost, but I am still, you know, a filthy monkey.
Huh. Wow. I hadn't considered that.
Joe, how are you not too depressed to get out of bed in the morning?
It's a struggle, especially when I'm not with my family.
I do admire your courage.
Thanks.
What, I mean, if I were you, I would wallow in infinite despair until I threw myself off a bridge or something.
Yeah, if I did that, I would miss these delightful conversations.
That is true. So you're saying I give you a reason to live?
Less than you might think, I muttered.
So, we're done? This whole discussion was a waste of my time?
Sorry.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
I promise to wallow in extra despair for the rest of the day.
Dave Chaika picked up his pace until he was moving at a steady jog toward a group of Ruhar on the edge of the airfield. The alien soldiers had just been landed by dropship and had walked out the back ramp safely away from where hot gases might be spewing from various vents around the spacecraft. The Ruhar, 28 of them according to the information overlay in his sunglasses, were special forces. He knew that from the white and orange color of their mech suits. When in action, the suits turned gray, brown, or engaged their version of chameleon wear. The white and orange were for high visibility in non-combat areas. Dave understood the advantage of being easily seen in the chaos of a crowded airfield with heavy spacecraft and ground equipment moving in random directions, but to his eye, the special forces had the appearance of an alien coast guard. Not that there was anything wrong with that. The UN Coasties were responsible for orbital traffic control and search and rescue at both Earth and Jaguar. Jaguar. A world that had been firebombed and survived under the literal blanket protection of a sentinel. Dave had friends on Jaguar. His company had an office there. When he heard about the outsider attack there, he had assumed the UN would cancel the joint operation to retake Ephustria.
Why bother with a sideshow when a human world had been attacked and was suffering? Am also had assumed the operation would be canceled. She had halted the combat loading of dropships and paused training while waiting for new orders. 18 days later, a UNN star carrier arrived with a message from DEFCOM. The liberation of Hephaestria was still on, to be conducted ASAP. Basically, M told Dave after she read between the lines of the official orders, the United Nations recognized that with Jaguar suffocating under a blanket and Earth under threat, it was good to cultivate allies. Hephaestria was also considered to be low-hanging fruit, an operation with minimal risk to DEFCOM, and most of the boots hitting the ground would be Ruhar or Verdcris. So, Dave had shrugged, got his people spun up again, and now he had his own boots on Hephaestria, doing his job to the best of his ability and praying every night that the outsider didn't firebomb Earth. Because he still had a job to do, the question was, why were Tezax, as the Ruhar called their special operations troops, on the ground in the assembly area? The inclusion of a special forces unit had not been in the briefing, and he wanted to know what their deal was before M found out and raised hell. He could have pinged the officer who had his back to him, but a face-to-face conversation would be more productive. Helmets were off and slung on shoulder clips. The officer's short mohawk haircut bobbed as he gestured with a knife hand into the other palm.
I want DCS and tactical database assimilation by 0830.
That drew a weary groan from the soldiers.
We boost off this rock in 2 days and a wake up, the officer continued. Anyone who expected a vacation can...
Nerdy? Dave blurted out. The figure turned, eyes growing wide.
Mr. Chaika?
Dave halted and snapped a salute.
I should have said Sarclass Danderf. He noted the rank insignia on the alien's chest.
In the Ruhar Federal Army, the rank of Sarclast was very roughly equivalent to an army captain in the NATO standard rank structure adopted by DEFCOM.
How are you? Hey, do you have a minute to,
He jerked his head toward an unoccupied area of the field.
Yes, of course.
Nert's grin was infectious.
Persevent,
he gestured to a more junior officer.
Get our gear over to the assembly area.
They walked in silence as a dropship was lifting off across the field, the roar drowning out even their noise-canceling earpieces. Dave watched the dropship gain speed and switch from belly jets to the main engines, soaring into the sky. When the roar faded to a dull whine and he could speak without raising his voice, he asked,
I'd love to catch up on what you've been doing, but right now, I need to know why a Federal Army Special Forces unit is here. We had no notice of this, and General Perkins will not be happy about this. Are you expecting trouble?
Nert's fuzzy face twisted into an expression of disgust that Dave could have recognized even without classes and alien body language.
We are here because the Army does not expect any trouble.
Dave blinked. You want to explain that?
My people haven't had a big, high-visibility win in too long. My unit is here to show the folks back home that the Federal Army is advancing freedom for our people, or...
He waved a hand.
Whatever our public relations people have chosen as a slogan for this campaign. We are supposed to be seen as in the lead during the assault, taking the fight to the enemy. Although, of course, we won't be allowed to take any actual risks that might make us look bad. Any of the tough, dirty jobs will be done by your Verdcris troops.
Don't worry about us. My people know what we signed up for on this op.
Dave was able to say without any bitterness. He had been in the mercenary business long enough to have developed a thick skin, and a healthy level of cynicism.
I am here because of that stupid Hard Knocks show?
Nert was unquestionably bitter.
That is a human invention I am not grateful for.
If it makes any difference, you were great on the show, Dave said.
The Ruhar had taken the concept of a show about a National Football League training camp and adapted it to follow a group of their soldiers who were candidates for the Special Forces program. The selection of the team that included Nert had not been random. That particular soldier was already a minor celebrity from his service with the Mavericks. Is there anything I can do for you?
Accidentally shoot me in the foot?
He held up one leg.
So I can avoid this shit show?
Dave laughed.
I'll see what I can do about that.
It might not be bad.
Nert looked up at a dropship flying over the airfield, squinting into the afternoon sun.
I'll receive the script this evening.
The script? Nert snorted.
Technically, it is an op plan, but we all know it's a script to make sure we put on a good show for the public back home. What the showrunners don't understand is the enemy will not cooperate.
Yeah, enemies can be dicks like that. Hey, I have an idea if you want to hear it.
What?
The enemy in your Special Forces puppet show?
It is not my show.
Nert grimaced, then laughed.
It is definitely a puppet show.
So the enemy has to be Kristang?
If you are thinking my team should be shooting at Theranin instead.
Nert cocked his head.
That idea won't...
What if the enemy looked like warrior caste clan assholes, but you could trust them to follow the script?
I should know the Mavericks well enough to know what you're thinking, but...
Verdkris, I'll get them dressed up in warrior caste gear, and the audience back home won't know the difference.
Nert's mouth opened silently while he grasped the concept.
Your Verds would do that?
Play acting instead of getting shot at for real? Hell yes. Throw in a bonus to cover their loss of combat pay, and they'll jump at the chance.
Sirkind Jaetz gave him the Force 10 Death Glare.
Say that again, Chaika, but slowly.
As long as I'm signing your paycheck, it's Mr. Chaika to you, Dave retorted, nudging closed the door of the shipping container he was using as a temporary headquarters.
Jaetz doubled down on the glare.
Or just Dave, okay? We've known each other for a while.